The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to have everyone, but let me tell you, I'm even more excited to have on our guest. He's a serial real estate investor, Corey Dieter. Corey, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and really honored.
Yeah, absolutely. No, listen, please, the honor's all ours. We're so fortunate to have you on. I can't wait to hear about some of your stories today. For those that are hearing your name and your voice for the first time, hopefully not, but if they are, would love to know a little bit more about where you're from, how you got into real estate, and what kind of real estate you find yourself in these days.
Yeah, absolutely. I am from Chicago originally and live here now with my husband. I got into real estate about 5 years ago, kind of by accident. My husband and I were living in an apartment in one of our favorite neighborhoods in Chicago and just happened to be walking around our neighborhood and saw a for sale sign. And the property was a duplex, and we crunched the numbers and realized that with the rent that, you know, we would get from the downstairs unit, our rent or our mortgage percent would be less than what our rent was. And so we said, why not do this? So instead of going the condo route, we decided to become landlords, and it has been such a dream since then. So that was a really good way to get into real estate, just dip our toes. And then probably maybe 3-4 years ago, we decided to be a little bit more active with our real estate journey. I started reading all the books, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, listening to the Bigger Pockets podcast, Rental Rookie podcast, all of these different podcasts to just educate myself. And I think the reason why I got so interested in doing real estate at that time is because I had my youngest brother was very, very sick. I was in a terrible job where, you know, it just made me question every single day, like, what am I doing? Why am I spending my time here? And really just hating the job. And so I said, I need freedom. I need to get to the point where I'm not checking my bank account every single day and asking my husband if I can quit today. And so we ended up deciding to purchase out of state and chose Indianapolis. And so we started with a couple duplex, small multifamilies. So we bought a duplex and a triplex in the summer of, I think it was June 2018. And from there, we decided to expand to different markets and really picked investor-friendly markets, in our opinion, you know, based on different economic factors, and just grew very quickly. So we went from having just our duplex in 2016 to now we have 23 units. And I think it's 12 properties total. And in the past few years, my husband has been able to leave his job and really work on managing our portfolio full time. So we do have a combination of self-managed properties as well as, you know, property managers that handle in these other markets, just because we're in, I think, five states maybe. And so it would be a little bit challenging to be able to be, you know, boots on the ground in all of those different places. And we're not the best property manager. So we really just manage our A-class properties that are very, very low touch and leave the actual property management to the professionals.
There you go. I love it. And I mentioned it every time. I love to hear everyone's backstory because everyone brings a slightly different perspective to real estate. Everyone gets in at a different time point in their life for different reasons. And it's just incredible to hear. And I hope it resonates with our listeners that if they're looking to get in, that, hey, that there's always a good time to be able to do it as long as you can make it work. So, Corey, I know we could probably go on and on about the success y'all have had and the what you've enjoyed about it, but we're really here today to flip the other side of that coin and kind of talk about the pains and struggles that y'all experience in building your real estate portfolio. So hopefully we can educate our audience and myself included on either things to not do or things to learn from your experience, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so important on anybody's real estate journey, because it's not going to go well or as planned every day. You're going to have those struggles. And so some of the lessons that I've learned, and these are probably newer lessons that I've learned in the past year. I think, you know, during COVID, we had a lot of time just to reflect and be introspective. And part of that was reflecting on our real estate performance. And the thing that really stuck out to me when I was looking at our portfolio and seeing which properties were performing versus ones that were like losing us money every single month was that the ones that we thought were going to make us the most money were the ones that, you know, on paper, the pro formas were the ones that were the doozies. And so my biggest lesson, and so we've got a mix of class properties. So we have A class all the way down to C class. And so when you look at a C class property, sometimes the pro formas appear really, really enticing. And I will say that I was greedy is probably a strong word, but I was really excited and eager to get those pro forma profits. And we realized is like it looks like that for a reason. And so over time, we've started. This is actually the first year that we've sold properties. So we looked at the properties that did not spark joy, did not spark profits, and decided, hey, it's a hot market. Let's sell them and figure out if we can deploy that capital in a better way. And so the two properties that we sold this year were headache properties. So one of them was a headache because we had issues with filling it. And then once we filled it, there was just a lot of drama with this one property. It was a duplex in Indianapolis. It had, when we bought it, it had a record of SWAT team invasion, and we cleaned it up. And then we had one of our tenants went to jail because of gun possession and beating his wife. And so that just, that wasn't the type of property that we wanted in our portfolio. And so even though we lost money cash flow wise, because the market had appreciated so much, I think we bought it for 139 and we sold it for 225. So we ended up doing really well at the end. And then the other property that we sold, it only took us a year. So this was a Milwaukee sixplex, and just had challenges with lack of payment. The city of Milwaukee, I think, had a target on this property's back. So we got neighborhood fines that we couldn't clean up because the tenants weren't that great and didn't want to support. So we ended up purchasing that one in April of last year for 130 and then ended up selling it for 192, I believe. And so again, like, I think for new investors, like, absolutely jump in there. If I had any advice, I would say be really, really picky and ask yourself the tough questions around whether or not you can actually achieve that pro forma. And so for us, what makes pro forma more achievable is kind of upgrading the class that we are investing in. And so we've decided to move more towards a solid B class portfolio on average. And so, yes, it looks a little bit more boring on paper, but when I ask myself, are we collecting what we thought we were going to collect? The answer is more likely yes than it used to be. So that would be my advice, is just to be pickier and more honest with yourself as you're going through the acquisition process. But I don't think that should stop anybody from getting in the game. I think you have to take a risk and you have to bet on yourself and believe in your ability to achieve a certain result.
That's interesting. I wonder, was part of the pro forma and part of the game plan to move it from like a class C or whatever up another class? Was that part of what you guys were trying to do in those, or keep it in kind of the same class, but really just for us to appreciate it through some different renovations?
Yeah, so these properties, it wasn't necessarily about improving the class so much. So one, the cash flow looked really good. We anticipated we were going to get great cash flow. And so if it stayed a solid C plus B minus, we were going to be okay with that. The challenge is the drama just got in the way. And so we weren't able to ever collect on that. The sixth unit that we sold, we did believe that if we held it long enough, we would be able to see appreciation just from a gentrifying market. But when I asked myself, like, is it worth the headache to see a neighborhood turn in 10 years? No, right? Because we asked ourselves, like, what are the properties that are going to want us quit real estate? And that was one where, like, my husband and I, you know, we're a team. And if he's not happy about a property, like, the dynamic is not good for our entire real estate portfolio. And so my job as kind of handling more of the acquisition and sales side, and he's handling more of the day-to-day maintenance, is how can I find properties or maintain a portfolio that is actually more joyful to manage? Because I don't want him to quit. This is something that we both have to agree on.
Yeah. What does that look like when you guys are looking to acquire new properties to help evaluate those criteria that you've kind of learned from and laid out now? What are those types of things that you're looking at?
Yeah. So one of the tools that I use quite a bit, well, there's a couple, but I'm checking rents on Rentometer. I'm also checking the crime maps on Trulia. So we used to be a little bit more flexible with crime. Just because in Chicago, you may see crime, average crime, and it could be because there's a Target right there and there's shoplifting that happens. It's not necessarily violent crime. So I think we're just being a lot pickier because we're not in those markets and we don't know them as well as we know our own backyard. So being super stringent on that and looking for places that we've seen appreciation. So we're not necessarily betting on appreciation, but we're looking for places that have stable, steady growth and incoming population. And the biggest thing that I would say we've been doing differently in our latest acquisitions is just asking people in that area, like, what do you think of this area? Do your kids have friends in this neighborhood? Is this a good school district? And hearing not only from the property managers or from the agent, but even like the contractors that we're working with, right? Like somebody that's going to give their opinion that has nothing to gain from providing that opinion is something that like I'm actually really taking those opinions to heart.
Yeah, that brings up a good point in the idea that, you guys move from investing in your own backyard to going out of state and out of market. What were some of the hurdles that y'all had to face? Because I know whether it's like on Bigger Pockets or some other places, we see and hear a lot of people that are hesitant to make that jump, and y'all did. And, I know you had your bumps and bruises, but y'all are ultimately doing well with those. What were some of the challenges you had with making that leap with your first out-of-market properties?
Yeah. So the first one is probably just understanding the nuances of those different markets. And so those nuances may be physical, like what are the types of property insurance claims that are most common in that area? Are you going to have termites? Are you going to have blown off roofs and siding? Like what's it going to be? What are the types of issues that are unique to each of those markets? So for instance, Milwaukee is known for not having like the greatest foundations. And so when we decide to purchase in Milwaukee, we're going to pay extra attention to foundations. Other markets are known for having like termite issues, right? And so just understanding what are the things that are going to cause issues in that market, and then trust in the team, right? So unless you plan on making yourself available and potentially camping out in that market, you have to find people that would behave and operate in the same way that you would, or would operate and behave in a way that's better than you would. And so they can teach you their best practices, ideally, right? So when we first chose Indianapolis, we spent a couple trips down there. We rode around with our agent for a couple hours looking at all the different neighborhoods. And we chose an agent who was an investor himself, but had also been raised in Indianapolis. So he knew every neighborhood really, really well. So I think if you are going to go out of state, that's one of the things that you should maybe look for. It's just somebody that's going to really, really know the neighborhoods well. And then I think just over time, realizing that there are resources that can help you build your tribe in a more accelerated fashion. So Jennifer Beatles is a friend of mine, and she has a great group called Addicted to ROI. And so I think there's strength in numbers too, right? So like if you build a community of other investors who are investing in the areas that you are, not only do you get resources more quickly, but when things don't go well, you can kind of rally together. So those are some of the things that have helped us to kind of make it less scary, right? It's less scary if you don't feel like you're doing it alone.
Yeah, I love that. We hear oftentimes people buying into a mentor program or directly into a mentor and learning from those experiences that others have already gained. They've already been there. And like you said, I mean, there's a lot of strength in numbers, and you can toss an idea out or a challenge. And oftentimes you're not the only person or even the first person that has had that or something similar to that. So they can give you that perspective and say, hey, here's an idea, or here's a way you can approach that situation that may be beneficial to help you get out of that, or be on the lookout for these types of things. I absolutely love that. I think that's crucial, especially for those looking to go outside of their market and they don't know that local market nearly as well as they do their own.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would like to say too, like, you don't have to pay for mentoring. You don't have to pay for education. There's so much out there that's free. And I think sometimes people think that if you pay for something, you're going to get better results than if you didn't pay. But I find often that, you know, sometimes when you pay, it just gives you the self-accountability because you've thrown money down and you don't want it to be a waste. But yeah, I don't want people, you know, listening here to think that they have to have $2,000 or $24,000 to throw down on a mentorship program. You need the self-drive, and you also need to know yourself well enough to know whether you learn better listening to podcasts or reading books or listening to others speak. And there's meetup everywhere that you can take advantage of, both virtually and in person. And so figure out what's going to work best for you and just apply that discipline.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's kind of like the gym, as you said. Some people just use the gym as I have to pay for this, or I'm going to go. But really what they just need is an accountability buddy to make sure that you're being there every day at the right time. So no, I completely agree. Find what works for you and your learning style and your learning method. But ultimately, it's going to be your drive and dedication that's going to get you there, because motivation will end, but dedication will not. So Corey, I think you've given us a ton of great things to think about and to kind of ponder if we're not doing. For those that are looking to jump in, I think you should go back and listen to what Corey said. She gave us a lot of gold there. So make sure you go back and listen to this one closely. Corey, for those that maybe want to connect with you, find out more about how successful you are and how y'all are doing it, we'd love to find out how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah, probably the easiest way is to just follow me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is core_REI. So it's a play on my first name. I am I'm a diverse person that is interested in more than real estate. So you'll see pictures of my dog there, as well as just exploring and traveling and all the things that make me a whole person.
And being from Chicago, I really hope there is some pizza on there as well.
Absolutely.
As we're a secret pizza podcast as well.
I like that.
Corey, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to educate us today.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And thank you all for joining us. We'll see everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.